The studio at 620 welcomes the Scotty Wright Quintet Saturday night at 7 o'clock for a special performance of music from the era of Duke Ellington. Radio St. Pete's Anna Marie spoke with Scotty Wright earlier this week.
I am thrilled, Scotty, to be talking with you this morning. Was very happy that I was able to stop by at the Hangar, St. Pete's Monday night hangout for jazz cats who want to be able to come and jam with one another. And I walked in and lo and behold, as I'm coming up the stairs into the hangar, who was being announced as the next singer up to the mic but Scotty Wright. I got online and looked at your blog and read a bit about you, but I'd like to hear it in your own words, if I may.
It's very simple. I'm a singer who's been singing since right after the womb. And I've been lucky enough to have spent my life making music. So I'm real grateful about that. It's been wonderful. I guess for the last 4 years, I've been coming to Florida for the winter season, January to April.
Great.
Bit by bit, I've been meeting people and collaborating and been giving you the opportunity to present some projects that were special to me. So it's very, very exciting to be able to do that. And of course, Duke Ellington is a thrill. So this is a pet project.
So specifically what Scotty is referencing is a performance that will be occurring on April 22nd at Studio 620 in downtown St. Pete on First Avenue. The start time is at 7 p.m. And you just heard him mention Duke Ellington, who he is very clear on his website, is a source of inspiration for Scotty. And certainly in listening to you sing last night and your way with the scatting demonstrates for me that you've got a good solid grounding in the jazz masters of olden days, the flexibility and liquidity of being able to move around within the chord structure was really powerful. Is there anything specific in your Duke Ellington show that is a theme for you other than the Duke himself? Anything that you're focusing on as you've pulled your programming together?
Well, the main thing about the Duke Ellington concert is that I decided to allow this concert of Duke music to be a celebration of not only Ellington, but also jazz period. Since Duke Ellington's birthday has been designated as International Jazz Day, April 29th, it's been wonderful that people have been able to acknowledge him as being a central figure in the development of his music and ultimately the development of music in general. So it's wonderful. I think the hardest thing for me with this concert is choosing one of maybe 1,200 songs.
Yeah. Yeah.
That he has written. So I pulled out, I start with everything that I know. Then I have to whittle that down to about 50 and then whittle it down to about 20, you know,
yeah.
And then try to figure out what I'm going to do and shape it with different things I'm doing. As a singer, I'm at disadvantage mainly because Duke Ellington is known mainly as a band leader and arranger. And so I've been able to have to take that element of his work out of the way and focus just on the singing, dealing with the melodies and the interplay between musicians.
Mm-hmm.
But even within that, there's a lot of ground to cover.
There is indeed. And one of the things I know as a fellow singer, when I'm pulling a show together, I do the same thing as you. It's, let's just throw everything in the pot and then let me figure out, okay, where is my musical muse taking me today? What kind of theme do we want to underscore? Are we going to talk about the playfulness of the lyrics? Are we going to talk about the chronology of what Duke Ellington was doing in his early career versus what he did the more that he matured and became an ambassador of this singularly robust art form of jazz, which is a musical language that is now spoken across the world in all countries and in many, many, many different languages. Do you find yourself searching for a theme or things to tie from one song into the next?
Actually, I had met an artist when I was on the road overseas, and she considered herself not only a conceptual artist, but also a contextual artist, where rather than actually creating something with an intent to make a statement, she was able to discover things randomly and then find a way to put them in a framework where they became art on their own.
Hmm.
And I find that with the music of jazz, I find that I can do that. So what I usually do is come from from the idea of a musician who's creating a program. And usually I try to keep some variety in it. So as a jazz singer, you want to do something that's going to have some swing to it. You want to do some balance to give people a little mood or atmosphere. And then you also want to have playfulness of the music, melodically as well as lyrically. And within that, I go with the ones that that are most fun for me, that I enjoy, but also ones that try to show a little bit of the personality, not only of the musicians, but also of the unit as a whole. And that's exciting. The most annoying thing I find I have found with most musicians is the fact that regardless of what the playlist says, I tend to deviate.
I think, what do we call that? Calling an audible.
Yes, indeed. Yes. That sounds good.
Yeah. So I was just in Virginia and was doing a big band fundraiser concert, and I have gotten to know the band leader enough to know that I better come with an extra 8 charts, whether they are instrumental or charts with vocals. And we craft our playlist together and then basically say, okay, maestro, over to you. Surprise me, which for me is sometimes nerve-wracking, because I will add charts into the lineup as those backup charts that I've actually never gotten to rehearse or sing with that group of musicians. So it's doing what I think you talked about in one of your blogs, which is being free enough to go where the music takes you instead of you dragging the music along.
That's quite true. You know, I think that the thing that the people are confused about when they think of jazz is they think of jazz as a finite list songs and a finite vocabulary, whereas jazz really is an approach to making music. I mean, we talk about this great American songbook, but within that, there are songs taken from all different styles and moods and intentions, and they are stripped sometimes of all those ideas, and placed upon them are elements of jazz that make it into a whole different song with a whole different attitude and a whole different mindset. And that's, and to me, I enjoy that. I find that it is nerve-wracking a lot of times for the musicians as well as the audience, because they say, well, wait a second, I thought he was doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's always something new.
Do you have in terms of an artist who best represents taking that foundational skeleton of a song from the songbook, whether it's a Cole Porter, an Ellington, a Basie, a Gershwin, and Irving Berlin, is there a jazz artist who for you embodies being able to take those well-known standard structures and really kind of turn it on its head and deliver something completely original with it?
As a singer, I think the first person that comes to mind to me would be Betty Carter. Betty Carter is amazing for doing that. She takes the songs and reworks it and empties out all the attitude and all the intent for the song and create something new with it. And she's completely elastic in the way that she works with the music. And I enjoy that. There are other singers who have an approach where they choose not to be an element that's in the service of the song, but she uses her voice or her approach and has the song serve it. And that's really exciting. And if you take it in that context, I would say it would be Sarah Vaughan.
She
has such an incredibly unique style and approach to singing that basically any songs you throw at her, if she's in the mood to sing, it's going to become a Sarah Vaughan song.
No question. Yeah, exactly. And I think from a pure musician perspective, the jazz musician who embodies that most for me would be somebody like Miles Davis, who...
Yes.
Had a grounding in musicianship and the standards, but as he grew and explored his craft more and more and more, there will be a song and I'll be hearing it on the radio or have my playlist going, and I know it's a Miles Davis tune, and I'll know that I think I know what song this is, but it will only be a snippet or a phrase of a standard song, and then he goes somewhere else and it's like, oh no, I guess I was wrong, and then he comes back to it again, and I'm blanking on which song it is, but something like How Deep Is the Ocean or All the Things You Are, where there's just a little bit of a snippet that I recognize as being this song that I sing all the time, but I couldn't keep on the melody for the life of me if I tried to sing along with what Miles Davis is doing.
Well, you know, I think that's one of the things that I've had to somewhat gently remind people of, is that they're sitting there, well, where's the melody? what the instrumentalist is doing is the melody. And what's happening is that that melody is being being reinterpreted, but it's also being created on the spot. And that's what we're doing. A lot of times when we try to hold on to what we understand as the melody, all through the song, we get lost and we get confused and ultimately frustrated. But the idea, we have to recognize that what he's playing, the lines that Coltrane or Oscar Peterson are playing, that is the melody.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing. We're doing it's a new melody.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of jazz, is being able to take a song that's created with all the five basic elements of music, which are melody, harmony, rhythm, lyric, and form.
Mm-hmm.
And then just put them in the pot, stir them up, and take out some things, add a little more of something else, and it becomes something new. And it's wonderful.
One of the quotes, I was telling you about the convocation at Academy Prep, and this morning's quote, they end with an inspirational quote. This morning's quote was from Herman Melville, and the quote is, "It is better to fail in originality than to succeed in imitation." And how perfect for this conversation about jazz.
Absolutely. And one of the things that is important for young or new musicians who are approaching jazz is recognizing that your goal is to say something, that's yours. We had used to have a phrase that was popular back in the day. When you listen to a jazz musician and you start hearing a little bit too much of someone else's style, you say, well, he's good, but he's picking up somebody else's mail. And that's what it is, you know. So, yeah, that girl's good, but, you know, she's picking up Ella Fitzgerald's mail, you know.
Well, you know, mea culpa. And part of that is that I have a background more in theater and in Broadway. Yes. So I'm used to lots of rehearsal. And the idea of doing what you did last night at the hangar, of getting up and just by the seat of your pants, choosing a song, finding the key, hoping you remember the lyrics, hoping that the other musicians that are playing along, that you're all in this team together, are going to be able to piggyback on one another and not be picking up someone else's mail, but creating in that moment is just, it's exhilarating. And for me, it's terrifying because I'm so used to rehearsal.
Well, I understand. And of course, you know, the thing that's really important is that every time that you step on stage, you are hoping to create an atmosphere around yourself that people trust you as part of the unit, even just for that one song. That they will go where you are leading them, or that you will respond and go with them when they are leading. And it's that duality of surrender and leadership that goes on when you play. That is wonderful when it happens. But very often you are generating this kind of energy, and what happens is it skips over one person who's either not paying attention or doesn't have confidence in himself, or else just has the attitude of, no, you're going to play it my way because this is how I do it. And so that cycle of energy just stops, and you have to either let thing break down, or else you just skip over him and make the energy with just these four and leave him out of it.
Yeah.
But it's always a joy to see how that happens and how you make it happen when that occurs.
Well, folks, we are listening and speaking with Scotty Wright, the jazz voice who has come to visit the St. Pete area. Scotty will be doing his Scotty Wright Sings Duke Ellington at Studio 620 at 621st Avenue North in St. Petersburg, Florida. That's on April 22nd, beginning at 7 p.m. It's approximately 7 to 10. And then, Scotty, I don't see it on your event page or on your website, but I know that for those of us who are not able to join you on the 22nd, you've got another gig in the area doing the same show with the same phenomenal musicians. I'm going to ask you to talk a little bit about over in Sarasota. What is that show date, and how can people get tickets to either that or the 620 event?
Well, the second date is going to be sponsored by the Jazz Club of Sarasota, and they do a regular Monday jazz series. And so we are performing on Monday, May the 8th. At the Florida Studio Theater, and that's going to be the second show. We've done that a couple of times in the past, where we fashion a show and perform it either at the jazz club of Sarasota, one of their events, and then at another event up here in St. Pete, because quite simply, people don't necessarily want to drive that far. So it works out. But,
yeah.
But it's wonderful. And they've been very, very gracious in sponsoring my events. And I'm really happy.
Well, we're very lucky to have you adding to the pot of gumbo that is music in and around St. Pete.
Absolutely.
So tell me a little bit about who these phenomenal musicians, your quintet that you've pulled together.
As I said, it was about almost 5 years ago that I first came to the Tampa Bay area. And I originally came here just to visit my friend Donna, and we gallivanted around to see different types of music and meet different people. And as a result, I started meeting folks and culling different contacts and things of that sort, so that every year I would be able to have other people to draw on to put together these different shows and performances. And so this group here has been is just a wonderful, wonderful group. On piano, it's going to be Pablo Arancibia, who's a wonderful pianist from Spain. And he's a newbie, basically. He's only come here about a couple years ago, but he's wonderful. And if I can sneak a little confession into you, when I met Pablo here, he had great facility on piano, but he was coming here from Europe, and basically, well, sorry, Pablo, but his jazz approach was a little bit polite. He's a good player, but he needs to get down in the mud, you know, and he needs to get pushed around a bit and you know, get a chance to really assert himself more. And in the last couple of years, I've seen him grow and be really responsible. He's not a shrinking violet anymore.
Yay!
And he's wonderful.
I know you're going to talk about the other four in your group, but I do want to say that as part of your background on your website, it talks about the fact that you are a vocal teacher, and it sounds to me more like that you are a jazz mentor teacher, not only to vocalists, but to instrumentalists who are curious and exploring this art form. So that's great.
I accept that mantle with great pride, because I see it as a way of paying it forward. You know, the movie from back in the 80s where a young child had come up with a school project, and his idea of making the world a better place was for people, rather than paying somebody back, but pay someone forward, mm-hmm. by taking the gift or the favor that's been done to them and extending it to a next person who may be unknown, and they do the same. And if everybody is doing that, the improvement in the world will be exponential. And Amen. So with me, I've had so many people who have schooled me and trained me and defended me at a time when I needed that help. And I may never have seen them again, but I can pay them forward by helping someone else in their name. And it's a wonderful thing.
That's great. And I can't think of any waters that would be better and more fun and more life-changing to swim in than the waters that you move in. And I see on your webpage you've actually been around the world.
Yes,
I saw a recording of you in Chengdu.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was lucky because I was born into a military family. And so by the time I was 7 years old, I was in another country. And in the following 2 years that my father was stationed there, I got to visit about five countries before we left. And then by the time I was 12, I was in Taiwan. And by the time I was 15, I was on the road playing music. So, you know, I mean, it was great to be able to travel around and meet different people and experience different things. But I found out something very, very curious and very exhilarating. I found out that I learned more about myself than I ever did about any country that I've been to, because we fashion our identity based on who we are, and that is who we are as reflected by the people and the experiences around us. When mm-hmm. you don't have those experiences again, now you have to redefine yourself or to re-defend yourself to be able to still maintain identity in the face of all the stuff that's very, very new and very different. So I've been lucky. I've been to about 21 countries now, and it's wonderful. I've definitely have learned a lot about myself, and I reconfirmed that music is where I need to be.
Yeah, it's well, and I think just by virtue of coming all the way across country, being a bi-coastal artist. Coming all the way across the country and being able to establish and grow a network here and be able to give back to the community. I would say that we're thrilled that you get to bring your sensibilities and your creativity and the ingredients that I'm sure are going to be a wonderful, wonderful, nurturing meal on April 22nd and again on May 8th.
It's going to be wonderful.
Real quickly, the bass, drums, guitar.
That's good.
Can you share who those musicians will be?
Absolutely. Pablo Arancibia will be on piano.
Mm-hmm.
On bass is Mark Neuenschwander.
Got
on
it.
Drums is Stephen Buchholz. And on tenor saxophone is the incomparable David Pate. And
that's wonderful.
And then the fifth member of my quintet is going to be me.
Yep, I got it. I got it. The voice is the ribbon that ties it all together.
Well, I sure hope so. Well, at least I'm the guy who waves his arms around and acts like he knows what he's doing.
Well, so that actually I have from one singer to another. I have a question for you.
Sure.
When you have a song and you've chosen it, and I assume that you're getting some rehearsal time with these fine gentlemen, but when you are up on the bandstand, as the singer, do you focus on just singing, or do you actually also lead the musicians and kind of be the band leader and the conductor and count in on the tempos?
I feel that a musician, and that includes vocalists as well, they have to have a certain kind of schizophrenia in order to do this work, because you have to be able to lead, you have to be able to tell musicians what you want in a particular situation, but you also have to be willing to surrender that leadership to someone else. Because when you're singing, there's so many decisions and choices that you have to make with every note that you sing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm singing it, and I have an intention of going to this particular note in this particular fashion. And yet I'll hear something the bass player does, a rhythm pattern that the drummer does, and I have to shift gears and say, that's nice, I want to do that.
Yeah.
Or I have to decide, well, no, I still want to stay. I believe in my note, my phrase, so I'm going to stick with it and give the drummer an opportunity to say, okay, well, I'll back off and play what he wants to play.
Yeah.
But it's always that give and take. And the duality of being a leader and a follower simultaneously is always a challenge, and it's great to do it. But the basic idea that most musicians, instrumentalists, receive, and it was a friend of mine, it was a drummer who told me this. He was doing this for a music clinic that he was doing. And he says, we'll talk a little bit about technique, because I know all you guys want to deal with your technique or anything. But I think the most important thing to tell you, for every job that you do, before you start the job, go outside and look at the sign out front. If you don't see your name, the show is not about you.
Interesting.
Yeah, so you have to be willing to submit to what is being done. And
yeah.
it was wonderful to do that, because if you have a quintet of five people who are all submitting to the whole, it's going to be magic.
It will be magic. Oh, I can't wait to experience some of the magic that you and your... So do you and your quintet, is it the Scotty Wright Quintet, or is there
it
another...
It is for today.
Okay.
It is for today.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of like when Blue Note Records came out, they created a core of musicians who basically were the rhythm section in every different recording that came in, all these different singers and horn players. They were backed up by the same rhythm section. And then every once in a while they said, okay, well, Herbie Hancock, why don't you do a record? And now he became the leader.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, how about you, Ron Carter, what do you want to do? And he became the leader. And Tony Williams, what do you think? And as so everybody has the opportunity to lead. And as they work together so often, nobody's ego gets bent out of joint when someone says, this is what I want. This is the song. This is what I want you to do. And so everybody is in that gentle flow of being able to give and take constantly. Mm-hmm. And it's a wonderful feeling. All these guys that I've worked with have all said they're anxious to work with me because not only do they enjoy and respect what I do, but also because they don't know what I'm going to do. And that's the fun of it.
You know, that's the joy.
Yeah. We want to be thrown in the deep end of the pool.
Yeah. So deep end of the pool, there are those of us as singers who might say that your freedom with scatting would be like throwing us into the deep end of the pool. Can you talk a little bit about what the art of scatting is for you? And when you get a glimmer that, okay, I think it's time for me to scat, what kind of goes through your heart and your mind at that moment?
Basically, when people talk about scat singing, essentially what it is you have the opportunity to improvise in the same manner that an instrumentalist would, but you do it with your voice. Now, when you sing, you usually find notes and syllables that you're bringing, but these syllables are made into words. Do nothing till you hear from me, or miss the Saturday dance. These are things that we work with. And with that, you're working with sounds, you're working with attacks and accents and things of that sort. Mm-hmm. There. Now, take those sounds away and replace them with any other sounds, and you still have the opportunity to have that kind of attack and approach. But what you're doing is you're allowing it to go kind of freestyling out of what you do. Now, in scatting, there are certain syllables that you need to be able to say because, you know, to so say is boring.
Yeah.
And if you just say la 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 is boring. So what you're doing is you're using your voice to be able to create certain patterns. So the first thing you have to do is find a basic pattern. And in jazz, most of the time, our basic unit of work is the eighth note. Because if you're in 4/4 time, 1, 2, 3, 4, 2, 2, 3, 4, what you have is a rhythm that is established. There's a straight rhythm, 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 1 and 2 and 3 and 4, and there's what is called swing rhythm, which is you have kind of a triplet feel. So yeah, because rather than ba 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 da ba da ba da ba da ba da ba da ba da. Now, what you found just right now, I've made an example of doing a swing rhythm with eighth notes using syllables. Now, one way of doing it is to make your vocal apparatus work with that eighth note pairing thing. So if you got so you try to give that some kind of identity. So most people will do ba and da because the ba works with the lips, mm-hmm. and the da works inside the mouth. So you have that rocking back and forth. Ba da 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 ba da. And with that you can put your melody on top of that. Ba do ba do ba da ba da ba da ba da da ba do ba da ba do da da. And you come up with different things. There's a triplet. Ba ba do da da ba do day. Ba do ba do da di da do da 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 da. But there's different ways of doing that. Now what you have to do, once you get used to doing that, then you can just let that go and think of a melody. And and you work with that. And as you create different melodies in your head, basically you say, I want to go to a particular note. Well, fine. You can just swoop up to that note, or you can find a way to get it. And you do your syllables to create that thing, and you reach the address that you're aiming for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the fun of it. The whole idea is you have to remind yourself that nothing is planned except if you plan it. And you do that yourself. But you have in scatting, or in all of jazz improvisation, you have certain absolutes that you have to follow. There has to be somebody who is the anchor of what you're mm-hmm. doing musically. And in most jazz situations, that anchor, that absolute is time.
Okay.
So if you're singing and you're keeping your tempo 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, if that's the time and everybody commits to that time and supports that time, you keep that going. So you can do nothing till you hear from me, and it stays right in the rhythm right there.
Yeah.
But then you can also play with that time and make it elastic. Do nothing till you hear from me. And now you're stretching that out, and it gives you the opportunity to have a little elasticity in the music. But you also have to do nothing until you hear from me. You know, so it's another way of being able to work with that time and make it yours. And everybody within the rhythm section, they are committed to keeping that time and holding that down. So you can go anywhere you want to go, as fast or as slow as you can, and still know that beat one will be there.
Yeah. So I used to get in trouble in theater all the time because I would do something that drives musical directors of musical theater, which is can be somewhat rigid. Mm-hmm. I would backphrase a lot because I like the swing feel. And he said, no, you've got to land right on the one or the three. It's like, but that's no fun.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the standard songs of the Great American Songbook, were a lot of them were written mainly for Broadway musicals or mm-hmm. Hollywood musicals. And as a result, they wrote the music out very rigidly. Mm-hmm. So it was ba 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 da da ba 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 da. And it was written very clearly that way. Not because they wanted the music to be rigid or boring, but they wanted to have it as basically written out as possible so that when people want to use or can use their particular freedoms, mm-hmm. they have all written out so everybody knows where the one is. And that's the most important thing to remember. And I find that a lot of times with people who come from musical theater, they believe that the musicians are just going to stop and hold, wait for them to done. Yet you're my favorite work of art. Yeah. And that one is going to be move around when they want it to.
Yeah. Can't do that.
Jazz music is just buffalo all over you. It is stomping.
We're going to the end. Yeah.
We're going to the end of the song. Yeah. You know, if you're
there,
you get there, too bad.
Yeah. We're going to enter the train station. You can be left behind on the track if you want.
That's right.
Bye. Oh, Scotty, well, thank you so much. I feel like I've just gotten a little bit of a master's class in jazz sensibilities. So thank you for that.
Well,
again, folks, Scotty Wright here visiting us for the winter season. He will be doing two shows, one on April 22nd at Studio 620 on First Avenue North in St. Petersburg, the other over in Sarasota, at the Jazz Club, sponsored by the Jazz Club of Sarasota at the Florida Studio Theater on Monday, May 8th. Scotty, is there anything you'd like to leave our listening audience with? Anything that you'd want to encourage them to think about as it relates to your craft and your art?
Well, that's tough. Do we have another hour?
we'll go as long as you've got something to say.
No, I will say, first, thank you for all of you who support live music and live entertainment, and especially those of you who support jazz. It's somewhat sad to find out that this music that was created in this country has been marginalized and considered not important in the face of what can make the almighty dollar and things of that sort. I have been treated royally when I travel overseas just by mentioning the fact that I'm a jazz musician, and people, my feet never touch the ground. They're so honored that I'm there to share this music with them. And yet here, you know, they look at you and they say, well, okay, well, he's jazz. He's one of those old fogies. He can't play anything. But what we need to find is a way to support the occupation, the vocation of being an artist,
mm-hmm.
and understanding that the motivation for an artist is not just to be on Facebook or just to be winning Grammys or things of that sort. It's about making music. You know, the recording industry originally was created to document art. not to increase commerce and mm-hmm. not to make a product, but to document art. The first recordings that we heard were actually speeches or sermons that people were saying. Caruso was performing in an opera and people recorded that. And it was there and it was wonderful. But then somebody came along, wait, we can make money at this. Mm-hmm. We can make money at this. So then it would be great to record and be able to supplement one's income. But it becomes a problem when people say, well, let's just go to, let's find a way to make money and then call it art. And I think that we have done the art community in our country a disservice by making art all about money and without any thought to content or intent.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm grateful for being able to go places like at the Hangar last night and have people who did not come to perform. They just want to sit and be voyeurs, watching how this stuff is created, watching how it happens, watching how it works, and also how it doesn't.
Yeah, and, there's and that.
It's great to do that. But, you know, but this is what people have done in other aspects of art all the time. There's been improvisational theater. There's been stand-up comedy, but people come up and they try these jokes and the jokes fall flat and the comedians laugh and the audience laughs and they get the chance to see this stuff being created right before their very eyes.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful to do that. So I ask for you to support live music wherever you may find it. I ask you to support any jazz society or jazz club who sponsors this music anywhere you can find it. And most importantly, I ask you, I implore you to show up on Saturday, April 22nd, studio at 6:20.
Studio at 6:20. And
it's going to be a wonderful evening with the music of Duke Ellington and these wonderful musicians I'm working with.
And I can tell you, having heard Scotty work his magic last night at the Hangar, sponsored by the Al Downing Tampa Bay Jazz Association, you are in for a treat. Not only are the tones and the notes coming from Scotty's mouth smooth and sweet and embracing and enveloping, but there's a twinkle in his hot eye that comes through in every note he sings. So, folks, don't miss it. You'll have a phenomenal evening of wonderful music.
Yeah, Scotty, by all means. Come on by. I'll be twinkling.
Yay!
I'll be twinkling just for you.
Oh, thank you so much, Scotty.
When you turn the lamp down low, I'm beginning to see the light. I used to ramble.